Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click Promote and publicize your congregation to the world.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here in the last 10 minutes of the program on this Wednesday afternoon, Terry Mattingly will join us to talk about several issues. The movie Angels and Demons, the killing of an abortionist. We're talking about George Tiller then. And then we'll discuss a little bit of the media coverage of Ukraine's Day of Remembrance for the victims of political repression. Can the media in the Ukraine tell the difference between religion and politics? We'll answer those questions here. Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, founder of GetReligion.org, and he writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. Terry, welcome back.
Hello again.
On the subject of this book and movie that I take it differ somewhat from one another, Dan Brown's book Angel and Demons has an obvious anti-Catholic bias in it. What about the movie by the same name or its director, Ron Howard?
I think it's really important to realize that the book, Angels and Demons, in a strictly technical sense, is not anti-Catholic. It's anti-conservative Catholic. In fact, I think what's the most interesting thing about the book and the movie is that, you know, it's very apparent in that book, before The Da Vinci Code. The Da Vinci Code is infinitely more radical, you know, in terms of what it's attacking, in terms of the historical moorings of the Catholic Church and the Christian faith, of course. But you don't get that as much in Angels and Demons. What you get in Angels and Demons, and it's even more true in the movie than it is in the book, is this sense that they're kind of cheering for a certain type of person in the Catholic Church. So it's not that it's attacking the Catholic Church. It's trying to attack part of the Catholic Church, and I see it praising another.
What is that other part that it is praising?
Well, that other part is the modernist, progressive, adapt to the times side of the Catholic world.
Is that particular part of the Catholic Church part of the fiction of the movie, or does it really exist among us today, Terry?
Well, there's no question in the movie you've just had the death of a popular progressive pope. And then you have, you know, the four preferiti, the four men who are supposed to be the favorites to become pope, they're also described as, you know, either liberal or progressive or whatever. And thus that gets into the fact, and I don't want to blow the big twist ending for folks here who haven't seen the movie, you end up with a villain who is the most articulate conservative in the film. Ends up being literally the madman at the back of it all.
So is this just more of Hollywood kind of going after anything that would be Christian and conservative at the same time?
Well, once again, I'm sure beyond all shadow of a doubt that Ron Howard does not believe he's attacking Christianity. Ron Howard believes he is attacking narrow-minded people of bad character, and he's promoting what he views as good Christianity.
What's that view? This progressive idea, the kind of
exactly.
open-ended Catholicism?
Exactly. And I think it's very interesting to read the Da Vinci Code through that lens, in the sense that it's apparent that Dan Brown's views of religion, or more specifically those of his wife, who apparently plays a major role in kind of the moorings of the books, it does seem that his views actually evolved in a more radical direction between Angels and Demons and Da Vinci Code. Angels and Demons is at least openly and honestly what it is. It is a liberal Catholic book.
This is very interesting because up to this point, most people were reacting to Dan Brown's books. and to a degree, the movies that spun off from them, as a broadside and the broadest of broadsides against historic Christianity. It sounds like it's a little more nuanced than that.
Yeah, Angels and Demons just really doesn't go there. I mean, that's not what it's about. It's a thriller set inside the Catholic Church. And you should remember Dan Brown, of course, was raised as an Episcopalian, which means he has some background that is semi-Catholic. And I'm trying to remember the biography of his wife, so I won't try to remember that and guess. But it's very clear that there is a reform and change agenda aimed at the Catholic Church in Angels and Demons. But not, he would insist, it's not anti-Catholic. And that's why the end of the column I just turned into the wire service today, I think, is important, which is it stresses that in Ron Howard's mind, this is a book and a movie that has good Catholics in it and bad Catholics in it. The key, though, is that Dan Brown gets to tell us who is who.
Turning to the subject of George Tiller and his murder in his church some weeks back, your general reaction to the media coverage of that tragic event?
To the media coverage or to the commentary on it?
Let's start with media coverage and then commentary.
I didn't think the media coverage was all that bad. In fact, there were one or two pieces that I thought were pretty good, especially there was a piece in the Los Angeles Times that devoted quite a bit of attention to the views of kind of mainstream pro-lifers and their reaction. But my basic criticism is that everybody seems to think that Randall Terry, who's no longer even the head of Operation Rescue, that Randall Terry somehow speaks for the pro-life movement. So my criticism was that I kept waiting for the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference or the Southern Baptist Convention or the National Right to Life Committee to be quoted prominently on what they say about Tiller's murder, because there's no question what they would say, right? So I kept waiting for the mainstream to get a larger voice in this, obvious tragic event, sad event on a host of different levels, but certainly not what the pro-life movement would endorse.
So what about the commentary then?
Of course, was another return to kind of this moral equivalency situation, which is that the pro-life movement is responsible for Tiller's death because there are pro-life leaders who use words like murder to describe abortion. And if you describe abortion as murder, you've got to be prepared for the hotheads that are then going to run out and one eye for an eye and eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, whatever the rest of the cliche is.
How do you respond to that, Terry?
I think that's why I asked you whether you wanted me to respond to the news or to the commentary. The commentary that's pretty much we go there every time something like this happens. Although, of course, there have been, five deaths in the history of the abortion industry and that's five too many, but that's still five over 15 or 20 years. So these things don't happen all the time.
Finally then, Terry, what is the Day of Remembrance in the Ukraine, and what is your take on how that was dealt with media-wise?
Huh. That's interesting, because now you're asking me a question about the media in Ukraine.
Yeah.
I actually had a speaking engagement in Kiev a couple of weeks ago, and I wrote that column. I was touched by the fact that religion plays a very powerful role in Ukraine, and yet it's hard to put your finger on it. I mean, in the sense that the Orthodox Church there, I should say the Orthodox Churches, there are three different communions within Ukraine, and one of them is openly linked to the Moscow Patriarchate, and the other two are more explicitly Ukrainian. So there's some political overtones that come along. I just noticed, once again, this difficulty that journalists have, where you take a picture of an event and every picture you take involves religion. Religious people, religious garb, religious images, religious slogans, prayers, rituals, everything seems to have religion in it. Then when you read the story, there's no religion at all. It's just politics.
It sounds like it's not much different than in some sense, what we have over here by way of coverage. We've got about a minute.
It's just a little bit more obvious because the Orthodox Church is so photogenic. mean, you know, I mean, so it's just hard to hide orthodoxy when you take pictures of an event.
Well, that's true. American Christianity, by and large, walks around in a three-piece suit, or more often than not, a golf shirt and shorts.
Yeah, my point exactly.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, founder of GetReligion.org, and he writes the weekly On Religion column for the Scripps Howard News Service. You can read Terry's columns at IssuesETC.org. Click on demand. IssuesETC.org. Click on demand. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks a bunch.
It is true. I mean, think about how conspicuous the Christian religion is in places like Ukraine, at least visually, how conspicuous. And even then, the press has a hard time figuring it out. Maybe if American Christianity made an attempt to be a bit more conspicuous, to do less of the fading into the wallpaper that we do in pop American culture and stood out a little better, maybe we wouldn't have so much reason to complain that the media can't tell us from anyone else, can't tell us from one another. Maybe if Christians actually were prominent in the sense of the sore thumb kind of prominence in our culture, not only visually but in every other way, the media might understand what Christianity is really all about. Maybe if we made the center of that prominence not just the way we look or sound, but our message, Christ and Him crucified for a world of sinners, maybe the media would say, maybe that's what Christianity is all about, Christ and Him crucified for sinners. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.